May it please the court, Andrew Burney on behalf of the United States. As this court previously concluded in granting an injunction pending appeal, the Supremacy Clause precludes California from applying Section 10 of the No Vigilantes Act to the federal government. Since this court's prior decision, three federal district courts have agreed with this court's analysis and enjoined materially analogous state laws and a local ordinance. This court should reverse the denial of a preliminary injunction as to Section 10. The legal principle that governs this case is both well-established and straightforward. Absent express congressional authorization, something no one contends is present here, states are prohibited from directly regulating the federal government's operations. As this court concluded in its prior opinion, that prohibition applies regardless of the manner or the degree of the state regulation. There is no de minimis exception. It applies regardless of the importance of the federal activity being regulated. And a state law directly regulating the federal government is void, regardless.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, counsel.
No, please.
Since the last opinion that we issued in this case, has anything changed that the government would like us to consider, or is this just a purely legal issue? And from the government's perspective, we're in the exact same position we were when we last heard argument in this case.
From the government's perspective, nothing has changed. We think it's a purely legal issue, and that's how the court correctly treated it. The only relevant legal development, I think, is that if the court even deems it relevant, is that three federal district courts, as I've said, have since agreed with this court's analysis and enjoining similar laws. But from our perspective, nothing has changed.
Yeah, you mentioned the other three district courts. I think three different circuits have really adopted some of the reasoning in the case. I take it that those cases are winding their way up to appeal, or those cases are not being appealed. Do you know?
I think so. So there's a Virginia case, a New York case, and
Pennsylvania,
and a Pennsylvania case. The first two are state laws, and the third is a Philadelphia ordinance. Virginia has appealed the decision against it in the case enjoining its statute. I don't believe that notices of appeal have been filed in the other two cases. If I find out that that's wrong after the argument, I can submit a 28-J, but I don't believe notices of appeal have been filed.
Does it matter in your view in the application of the principles on which you're relying that California seeks to regulate conduct that is quintessentially governmental conduct that only government officers can engage in? And they make that point very explicitly in their answering brief.
Right. I think that's right. I think that makes this an easy case, Judge Collins. I mean, this is even if one assumes that Johnson's general law dictum identifies a category of state regulations that's permissible, which we, of course, dispute in our brief. This case, of course, wouldn't implicate that principle because this is a direct regulation of an inherently sovereign function, namely law enforcement. And there's just no decision from any court that is, other than the district court opinion below, with which this court has disagreed, that has remotely blessed any similar state regulation.
We really have no occasion here on the facts of this case and the nature of the law that's being challenged here to address the scope of what you're referring to as the Johnson dictum and whether or not a more general law that regulates activity that private persons can equally engage in and that incidentally sweeps up the conduct of an officer who's performing official duties, that issue isn't really in front of us here.
That's correct, Your Honor. I don't think the court needs to address that sort of hypothetical statute in this case.
So whatever the law that might apply if we were looking at government officials, to quote Johnson, turning at the corners of streets, that's not the ballpark we're in here.
Right. I think that's right. I think that's right, Judge Bennett. That sort of statute, as this court noted in its prior opinion, regulates conduct as to which a private party and the government likewise engages. That's very different from a law like this one that only applies in the performance of law enforcement duties. I think even in a case like that one, we would have a different opinion as to whether that could apply to the federal government, but there's no occasion for the court to opine on that in any way, just as it didn't in its previous opinion. This is also obviously nothing like the sorts of laws that in some manner touch the federal government indirectly, even if they don't directly regulate, like, for example, a non-discriminatory state income tax applied to the earnings of federal employees, or price controls on federal suppliers, or certain regulations of state contractors. There's just no parallel for this type of law in any jurisprudence from this court, the Supreme Court, or any other court. We also think that the court's equitable analysis for purposes of injunction pending appeal was both correct and is controlling here on the merits. Any law like this one that purports to directly regulate the federal government in violation of intergovernmental immunity principles, particularly a law like this one that's backed by criminal penalties, constitutes per se irreparable harm and is contrary to the public interest. I mean, we obviously did in the district court put in evidence of the burdens of compliance with this law on federal operations in the form of both operational safety and officer safety and operational considerations, but the court didn't address that in the panel opinion, and we think there's no reason for the court to address it here.
And there's no balancing of the equities involved in the government's view?
I don't think so, and that's what the court said in its prior opinion. I don't think there's, I mean, we do take issue with California's claim harmed in our reply brief, but I don't think there's any circumstance in which this court, upon concluding that the federal government is likely to succeed, particularly when it's made that determination as a purely legal matter on a law that impermissibly regulates it and that irreparably harms it. I don't think there's any equitable analysis that would apply as to which the state would be able to continue enforcing its unconstitutional law. And that's what this court held at the prior stage, and we think that applies equally here. I'm happy to address any further questions the court has. Otherwise, I'll reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal as needed. Thank you.
Judge Bennett, any additional
questions? No, I have no questions. Thank you for asking.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. Micah Moore for the state. I wanted to begin by acknowledging that the court has issued the published order on the motion for injunction pending appeal, and we acknowledge
got a tough job today, Ms. Moore.
I do, frankly. We acknowledge that.
But
that
you know,
order,
this is a chance to make additional arguments. I understand the answering brief was filed without the benefit of the court's opinion. If there's any error in our analysis, anything additional that you think the court didn't adequately consider, now's your chance to articulate that.
Sure, and we've had the opportunity to expand on our merits briefing, I think, on the briefing significantly since the emergency motion stage. And under East Bay Sanctuary Covenant, this panel does have the flexibility to depart from its earlier ruling on likelihood of success at the merits made at the motion stage. And so we would urge the court to consider those arguments in full. Our position is that the appropriate standard for direct regulation should include some assessment of the degree of interference with federal functions. As we've explained in our merits briefing, we believe that standard is consistent with authority acknowledging that intergovernmental immunity requires a functional inquiry because there are sovereign interests on both sides of the ledger. We also think that circuit precedent doesn't foreclose that approach. I'm aware that the court's order resolving the injunction pending appeal, for example, relied on United States versus California for the proposition that there is no de minimis exception to intergovernmental immunity. We think it's important to note that the court made that comment in the context of a discriminatory enactment. Discrimination has always been understood to be a core concern of the intergovernmental immunity doctrine, but we don't think that that should constrain how the court thinks about the direct regulation prong. And we think, as applied here, what that standard would show is that the federal government has not really advanced a credible argument that application of SB 805 would affect its ability to carry out immigration enforcement in the state. They're primarily relying on the risk of doxing and officer harassment, but the examples that they point to, people surveilling hotels or copying down license plates, are really unconnected from what SB 805 requires, which is a very narrow identification requirement that can be satisfied by an officer just giving their identifying their agency and giving either their name or a badge number, which no one disputes can be anonymized.
Counsel, I really don't want to just simply repeat the questions I asked you previously. And I mean, you are in a tough position because you're basically saying, we read what you wrote and you just got it wrong. And I understand that, and I respect the manner in which you're doing it. But, and I suspect this is probably similar to a question I asked you. I mean, when you look at the Supreme Court's decisions in this area, like United States versus Washington as one example, where the court talked about how its jurisprudence has moved over time and said, we later came to understand the doctrine as prohibiting state laws that either regulate the United States directly or discriminate against the federal government. And what is the best case that you can point to for the court saying, even for a law which directly regulates the United States, you, the courts, can look at whether there's a substantial burden in deciding whether that regulation is constitutional?
I think it really is the Johnson case. Johnson drew a distinction between a law that it viewed to impose a qualification on who the federal government could choose to do federal work, and it specifically distinguished that example from laws that merely affect the mode in which federal officers carry out their employment. And we think that in other language in cases like North Dakota
but
strongly suggests
there's a critical word that you left out in just referring to that passage in Johnson, and that is they draw a distinction between general rules that might affect incidentally the mode of carrying out the employment, as, for instance, a statute or ordinance regulating the mode of turning at the corners of streets. This is not incidentally sweeping up the conduct of officers in the performance of their duties pursuant to general laws regulating conduct that everyone can engage in. This is regulating government activity as government activity, because it is government activity. Do you have any case that has ever upheld, in any respect, burden or not burden, any case that has upheld a state law that directly regulates the activities of the federal government of a sovereign nature?
No, I don't have that case, and I gave you the same response, and my answer has not changed in between the arguments. I also don't have a case on the other side. I think this is an area where the law is quite complicated and developing.
But doesn't it really suggest that, I mean, if Johnson strikes down the requirement that it did there, which it viewed as a licensing requirement, doesn't that suggest that at a minimum direct regulation of the performance and eligibility to perform sovereign activities is something that's just off limits without regard to burden?
I don't think so. And I think even in this case, our position is really that some analysis required even to come to the conclusion that this is something that's going to impair inherently governmental functions. As we noted in our briefing, the federal government requires its officers to identify themselves when conducting immigration arrests. And so there's a substantial degree of overlap between what SB 805 requires and what the federal government instructs its officers to do as a matter of policy. And I'm aware that this court cited Arcata in its order and suggested that it shouldn't even take a look at the relationship between federal and state law because it's simply irrelevant for purposes of intergovernmental immunity. Respectfully, we think that's dicta. Arcata also went out of its way to say that in that case, the ordinances that were at issue were imposing requirements that were distinct from federal law. And so we think it's well within the court's discretion to consider that those sorts of issues in determining whether the direct regulation prong is met. But I take the court's perspective, and so I'd like to pivot to an issue that wasn't addressed in the emergency order briefing, but you had a discussion with my friend on the other side, which is how to deal with generally applicable laws that don't address things that touch on governmental interests like arrests and detention. And we agree that that question could be left for another day, given that that isn't the scope of SB 805 in the court's view. But I do want to make clear that we disagree with the federal government's position. I understand the federal government to essentially argue in its briefing that consent would be required even for a state to enforce a traffic law against a federal officer. Respectfully, we think that that's unsupported by precedent. Johnson itself didn't suggest that consent would be necessary to enforce a traffic law. It suggested that those types of enactments aren't running afoul of the intergovernmental immunity doctrine in the first instance.
But you would be, it sounds like you're urging us to follow what I think then Judge Roberts said if there's no need to decide, there's a need not to decide?
I agree. I think the court could safely leave those types of questions for another day, but I wanted to make clear that we did respond to that argument on the merits if the court were to think differently. And then one last point, my friend on the other side mentioned there are three federal district courts that have weighed in on this question in favor of the federal government. I don't believe any of those cases has yet litigated the issue to a final judgment. In some instances, the orders are quite succinct, and they're relying quite heavily on the reasoning reflected in this court's prior order resolving the injunction pending appeal, which, of course, was resolved on limited briefing and with argument shortly after the close of briefing. No circuit court has yet passed on that question, and so we don't view those decisions as being any sort of barrier to this court taking a fresh look at the issue when it considers the merits briefing. And so if there are no further questions from the court, we would ask that you affirm the district court's entry of the preliminary injunction.
Thank you. We appreciate your argument.
Yes, thank you.
I'll just make a few very brief points. As counsel for the other side acknowledged, this court said in California that there's no de minimis exception to the ban on discriminatory regulation, which this court repeated in its panel opinion. I don't think there's any reason that the rule would be different in the direct regulation context. I don't think the rule that a state can't directly regulate the federal government is just as fundamental to our system of government that as the principle that a state must apply its permissible regulations even-handedly. Just one more point about Johnson. There's been a lot of discussion about the dicta in Johnson, the hedge dictum. I think it's worth pointing out, and this is the case that California identified as their best case, the actual holding in Johnson, which I think Judge Collins alluded to, is that the state of Maryland could not even require a federal postal carrier to obtain a driver's license. So I think that underscores that that there's just no precedent for the type of regulation California has purported to impose here. I think the questions of truly neutral traffic laws are perhaps harder, and there might be disagreement, but there's no need for us to get into that hypothetical here for the reasons the court has identified. So if there are no further questions, we would ask the court to reverse.
All right. Any additional questions from my colleagues?
No, thank you for asking.
All right. Thank you as well, Mr. Burney. The matter is submitted. Court is adjourned.
All rise. This court for this session stands adjourned.